Abby here, back with you this afternoon. Burnout's a word that we hear a lot, but for so many Australians, it's more than just a buzzword. It's the reality. According to new research from People to People Recruitment, 2 in 5 Aussie workers started this year already feeling burnout, and we're already only in March. 90% believe workplaces ignore burnout until it's too late. So what's causing this? Maybe more importantly, how can we fix it? Joining me today is Suhini, an expert in workplace well-being, to unpack what's happening and how we can prevent burnout before it takes over. Welcome back to the show, Suhini.
Thank you so much for having me again, Abby.
Oh, it's so good to have you. Listen, I can't say that I was totally surprised by this topic or the findings of this research, but I will say that this is kind of a big deal, right? Like seeing burnout so quickly at the beginning of the year in workplaces.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really indicative of the times that we're living through. Yeah. We haven't experienced anything like this in ever when it comes to workplace dynamics. So it's a brand new world, and employers need to be ready in order to support their employees through this experience.
Yeah. And one of the things that the research that you guys sent through said was that it's actually stress levels are expected to rise even more so this year. What's behind the growing burnout crisis?
So exactly like you said, those rising stress levels are astronomical. You know, with 40% of workers that were surveyed expecting burnout to be harder to manage. And, you know, as you rightly mentioned, we're not even a quarter of the way through the year. And I think the reason why it's such a significant increase is because of the multitude of external factors that are also impacting and combining with internal factors. So historically, you know, when there's been burnout, it's generally due to internal issues in the workplace. But what we're finding now is external pressures like rising cost of living, very evident global market uncertainty and return to office mandates. It's all combining together to put a lot of pressure on the Aussie worker and creating a lot of uncertainty, which is increasing that that stress, which ultimately grows burnout.
Now, I do want to unpack that a little bit, but I was wondering first, kind of taking it a step back, one of the most surprising stats that I saw was that 90% of workers feel burnout is actually ignored until it's a little bit too late. First and foremost, why do you think workplaces struggle to address it before it's too late?
I think it's the mindset of having a reactive approach to this situation. You know, there are a lot of things that have in terms of HR strategies that we're well versed with, we know what to expect, and we can put strategies in place to alleviate that issue before it arises. But with burnout and what we're seeing now, it's such a unique set of circumstances, and sometimes it's not necessarily within the employer's control. As we just discussed, there's a lot of external pressures everybody is facing in day-to-day life. And so what we're seeing is employers, with no malicious intent at all, just sometimes being caught off guard, realizing, okay, I'm kind of waiting to see the burnout present in a physical form, rather than understanding that there are multitudes of things happening at the same time, 6 months, 12 months prior to the employee, and they're not aware of what the indicators are. Yeah. And so it's not necessarily out of ill will that they're tackling it too late. It's just that they don't understand what those passive indicators are to kind of go, oh, that's a red flag. I should tackle that and address that now. Yeah. And because they can't identify those things, it's very hard to then put a strategy in place to alleviate it.
I actually think, I don't think now, but probably early on in, working in the work field, I can relate to having the feeling of burnout, but not actually knowing what it is or putting a name to it. I think oftentimes we think of burnout as just being physically tired, but it tends to be more than that. So for those that don't really know what it is that they're struggling with or going through, what are some of the real warning signs that people should look out for?
So burnout is more than just your regular lethargy or tiredness after a work day. You know, we all feel that relief when we step foot through the door after a long work day and we're like, oh, you know, we're really knackered, but, you know, you can recover through the evening and get ready for the next day. Burnout is when it's persistent exhaustion beyond that normal tiredness, where day in, day out, you know, you're struggling whether to do your daily tasks, whether it's inside of work or outside of work, or, you know, just waking up in the morning consistently or carrying on a routine, whether that be gym or something else in your life. You're just not having the energy to even do the things that you usually enjoyed. And what you'll also see in the workplace is there's this very slow but consistent and gradual reduction of productivity. An employee doesn't necessarily mean to do that, but because of that inherent exhaustion, work that they would normally complete within a day might take them a little bit longer, 2 days, 3 days. And it's really important for employers to keep an eye out for those great performers or those consistent performers who are suddenly just gradually fading in that output. Yeah. And, you know, you'll also sense that emotional detachment from work, things that you usually enjoy, company that you usually like to converse with within the business, that feeling sort of ebbs away over time. And those are red flags that you should be really mindful of.
Like, it's one thing to kind of understand and know the red flags. And I'm sure that there probably is an aspect for us as the employer, for those as the employee. But what are some things that can be put in place, things that we can either do ourselves, things that employers can be doing to prevent burnout? Or when they do see some of those like side effects, the warning signs come up, what can they start doing to help prevent burnout sooner rather than later?
So I think the biggest and most important steps that employers can take is to endorse and embrace open and non-judgmental conversations about how employees are feeling on an overall level, whether it is about their work or whether it is about their mental health. Now, by no means, you know, are employers expected to take the position of a counselor or, you know, a therapist? Obviously, you know, we're not qualified to be in that position. Yeah. But half the problem is that employees don't even realize that they're experiencing burnout. And so it is a very economical, financially advantageous, and just a moral right thing to do to make sure that you have these conversations with your employees so that they feel that they can actually start the conversation to go, hey, I'm really not feeling that great at the moment. And once you cross that precipice, then you can start thinking about, all right, how do we actually address and tackle that situation? And I think that's a really good, easy first step to take as a business, because making sweeping change can be daunting for anybody.
Yep. I wanted to ask this next question because I feel like I grew up in a generation where it's almost like a cultural thing where we just push through. You know, you're sick, you still go to work, which ironically enough, that was sort of the conversation that you and I got to have last time, was this idea of sick leave and not having enough, or, you know, like fear of losing job over sick leave. But to relate it to what we're talking about today, we kind of just push through and ignore those signs of burnout. I think in some of the research, it talked about how some people push through exhaustion with caffeine and have this just keep going mindset. So what's the risk of ignoring burnout for too long?
Well, there are some real long-term health impacts for people with that mindset. And, you know, I really want to take that opportunity to acknowledge what you mentioned about the generational, identifiers the things that separate certain generations. I think there's a lot more that connects us than divides us in terms of that generational gap. But I do agree that there is a large mentality, particularly within millennials and boomers, where we just kind of go, you know what, it's tough, we're just pushing through and we're going to get through it. And that's not taking anything away from Gen Z. I just think Gen Z are a little better at defining their boundaries than what we are. And I think that's a wonderful thing. But there is such a risk with that, because what you're going to find is that you'll see a lot of employees coming down with chronic stress and mental health issues. And ultimately, that's going to result in a very high level of absenteeism. It's going to result in decreased job performance. It's going to increase the risk of errors, whether it's small or large within the business. And you're ultimately going to have a workforce that is unwell and unproductive. And it's going to impact them both physically and mentally. And for a business, just from a moral perspective, that's just not the right way to govern your employees in a healthy manner. And also just from a cost perspective, you're looking at a very, very high turnover rate over the next couple of years if you don't address it.
Yeah. So your research actually pointed that out. It found that 1 in 5 workers are willing to quit their jobs because of burnout. Do you have you guys found what it is that's actually pushing them as far as that point of just being done and quitting?
Well, I think it really stems back to that conversation piece. They don't, in many situations, they don't realize that it's not necessarily the actual operational activity that's making them miserable. It's the way that it's being handled, and it's the lack of conversation from their leadership team that can lead to the point of them quitting. And, you know, it's such an easy fix, and I'm not going to say that it will happen overnight, but implementing that environment of open conversations, of tell me what's going on, that in alone can be enough to really support somebody through in terms of finding out what they need in terms of additional support.
I know that you have now mentioned twice the importance of even communication, and I do think that opens the door, that eliminates fear. Like, that in itself can sometimes be more than enough. But the research found that, well, not even just research, I feel like this is probably publicly known, that a lot of things like vacations and meditation, it helps reset and rest. But do you think that's enough? Or do you think that even from a workplace perspective, there needs to be more of a change in order to handle stress?
Absolutely. And look, these changes are very deep. They're systemic changes. They're not things that are going to happen overnight. And you really need to evaluate what your workplace culture and approach is towards people's leave and vacation time. Mm-hmm. Because, look, vacation time is absolutely great. And I think in Australia, we are miles ahead of many different countries with having, you know, our 20 days of annual leave, et cetera. But the reality is there is a stigma in certain industries and certain companies with taking that leave. And unfortunately, what can happen is even if you take that leave and you take it yearly, if the environment that you're coming back to does not change, it's a band-aid solution. You know, it's not going to fix the ongoing issues that will just continuously wear you down. It's just going to elongate the potential of an employee quitting, but it doesn't fix it. And so you really need to embed burnout prevention strategies within your company policies. And that is not just about the conversation piece, but it's also about your approach to leave, your approach to flexible work options, all of those sorts of things, you know, what we discussed previously with sick leave, et cetera, they all go hand in hand, which is why employers can feel a little overwhelmed if they feel they're sort of starting on the back foot. But that's why I always say start with that conversation first, then it will give you an understanding of your workforce, and then you can start implementing some policies and strategies beyond that.
I guess I had a question of when you go back into a work field, workspace, and things don't change, then what? If things don't actually change, what then for the employee?
Yeah. So for the employee, if they come back and things haven't changed, or, you know, the business has gone through, the employer has gone through the process of asking these questions and, you know, talking about implementing these strategies to improve the burnout crisis, then they go on leave, they come back and not a lot has changed. They are then faced with that that difficult challenge of setting clear boundaries for themselves. And the way that they can do that is to start by working out what's going on outside of work that is a non-negotiable. Because 9 times out of 10, what you're going to find, Abby, is that A lot of things that contribute to burnout is when there are certain things that are important in your personal life that you are missing or skipping over or putting in the back seat to prioritize whatever is happening at work. And that's not a healthy take to have. And I understand that it's very difficult for some employees to set those boundaries, but a good place to start is identify the non-negotiable work-life limits. Just have a little list of, okay, these are the, you know, couple of things in my life that are really important to me and that I'm not going to, you know, allow to take a back seat any further. And if that means that you need to talk about some flexible work arrangements, whether it's, you know, to pick up your kids after school, or you decide that, you know, I'm not going to respond to those emails after a particular, like, you know, your finish time for the working day, which is now in legislation as well. Like, it is part of the law that you cannot be, you don't have to respond to certain things that are related to work after business hours. So they can take advantage of those things to make sure that they set themselves clear boundaries. And beyond that, you know, that's when they may need to decide whether that relationship can continue.
So then from, again, not to confuse the two, but from an employer perspective compared to an employee, flexible work hours is something that you just touched on, which can oftentimes be a solution. But what does that actually look like? So how do the how does the employer balance that with also the needs of the business?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And now I will preface this with, this is not going to be applicable to every industry, because there are some industries where, you know, clock in, clock out times are pretty strict, whether that's could be the retail industry, for example, or healthcare. And I understand that this is not a one a blanket policy for everybody. But I would say that true flexibility, it's about empowering your employees to manage their time effectively. And I think the biggest problem that employers face is that they use start and finish times as a method or an indicator of performance. Now, any people leader worth their salt knows that true superstars, they are not bound by you must start at this time and you must finish at this time. They are driven by outcomes. They are focused on, am I delivering my goal? Have I met a deadline? And, you know, how they manage that work by giving them the power to do that autonomously, it's amazing the amount of engagement that you'll get from your employee base. And so managers should really steer away from going, I'm going to assess productivity based on the time spent at your desk, right, and more about outcomes. And what I really want to emphasize to people leaders who may be facing these sorts of challenges with unproductivity and low performance is that you'd be amazed at how quickly genuine low performers become very obvious a lot faster when you actually empower people to be autonomous. So it actually works both ways, because you'll see the people who are really engaged and motivated and wanting to do their work in an efficient manner, and those that really struggle with that. But I would also encourage managers to really understand that hybrid work models that accommodate different needs, it's absolutely the way of the future. And I know that there is a lot of rhetoric right now and a lot of mandates that you're seeing with big companies, you know, forcing a lot of people to come back full time, et cetera. I really truly believe that once Pandora's box has been opened and people understand that there's a different way of doing things, it's near impossible to go back to the way things were. And I think businesses that are agile, adaptable and innovative will embrace that. A great way to rephrase empower, like I think that it's a great word, but another way that I explain the concept of empowering your employees is you have to start from a place of trust.
Yeah.
Any relationship, whether it's in work, whether it's friendship, whether it's a marriage, whether it's, you know, in any capacity of human interaction, If you are not starting from a place of trust where you believe that this employee is committed and wanting to come to work and do a good job, which is what 99% of Aussies want to do, and you immediately, if you don't start from that place of trust, you're setting up that relationship up for failure.
Yeah.
And I think that is the underpinning statement of empowerment, believing that the employee is here to do a good job and they're going to do it to the best of their ability. And then you as a people leader or as an employer have to assess whether their capability is what you need, and are they going to be able to suitably commit to the output that's required of the role. Yeah. And those are different problems and different situations. But if you don't start from that place of trust, then it's going to fall at the knees very, very quickly.
Thank you. The report that was sent through by People to People also used words or phrases that I actually don't think I've ever heard of. It talks about the difference between burnout blocking instead of burnout firefighting. Can you explain mm-hmm. what the difference is and how companies can start making real changes within that?
Yeah, so those particular phrases really tie in with the words reactionary and proactivity. So burnout firefighting is when an employer is essentially reacting to a situation. The problem has already manifested. It's clear and evident in front of you, and you're essentially putting out that fire. But you're not understanding the root cause of why it's come to light. And burnout blocking is when you dig deeper and you understand, okay, perhaps the job expectations weren't clear. Perhaps we, there are not enough clear, identifiable boundaries in terms of when people should take leave and rest breaks or flexible work opportunities, those sorts of things. When those strategies are put in place, that is burnout blocking. Mm. So you're taking a very proactive, preventative approach to burnout and really establishing workplace well-being at the forefront of what your goal is for your employees. So this ties back to what we discussed in terms of having very transparent conversations with your employees. And that's going to take time. You're going to have to build trust, if that doesn't exist already, that they are in a safe space to have that conversation and really talk about what it is that they need. And it's also the opportunity to set very clear expectations about their role. So this goes back to, looking at your recruitment process, for example. So when people come on board, do they have access to their job description? Are they clearly aware of what the outer limits of their role involve and what goes beyond that, for example. Mm. Those are the things that are going to give employees the tools to kind of go, okay, perhaps I'm stretching myself more than I need to, or if I am, what conversations can I have with my manager to work around this or approach our job delivery in a better way?
Yeah, that's so good. Thanks, Suhini. And while we're mentioning tools and resources to kind of help continue this conversation for both employers and employees, where can listeners head to learn more about your work with People to People or resources for preventing burnout?
So that's a really great question, because there is endless resources that I think people struggle with the fact that, it's almost information overload at times. And, there's a couple of things that businesses can do to start straight away in those small baby steps. So firstly, it would be to have an EAP, so an employee assistance program, because ultimately as an employer, you're not a qualified counsellor or a psychologist or a therapist, unless obviously you work in that industry. And so having that employee assistance program is just an additional support for your employees, where if you feel, okay, this issue might be a little beyond my scope of what I can assist with. Here are some direct access lines to qualified professionals who can support you through that process. So I would definitely start there. In terms of relieving the burden for employers directly, there are some great outsourcing tools that they can utilise. So one of the things that HR Solutions, the division that I look after in People to People, specializes in is with outsourcing for whether it's HR, or a payroll, and where you can get expert advice from people who have worked with hundreds of businesses in terms of what small strategic steps they can start with to help build a robust strategic outcome for 2025 and ultimately address the burnout crisis as well.
And for anyone who's listening right now, I know you've given so much advice and practical tools already, but for someone mm-hmm. who's listening and feeling overwhelmed or exhausted, what's one, like, even like just one first practical step that they can take today to start managing their burnout?
Okay. I think out of all the things that I've said, and I did mention this before, but I really, really want to highlight it because it is probably one of the best things that you can do, yep. is assess your life holistically. Don't think about work and personal life. Think about what are the things that are non-negotiable that are good for you in terms of enrichment of your life and fulfillment of your family life. Everybody has 2 to 3 things in their life that they can pretty easily pinpoint and go, these 3 things are non-negotiable items that are in my life that I want to maintain and grow or continue experiencing. It could be, you know, something as simple as maintaining a gym routine, for example, or making sure that I drop my kids off to school every morning so I can say goodbye to them. It can be as little or as big as that in terms of project size or activity. But if you can assess what those important items are and then think to yourself, what do I need to do to enable myself to do that? Mm. And that will start refining the conversation of what do I need to ask my workplace in terms of flexibility or support to make sure that these 2 to 3 core things don't get put by the wayside, because that ultimately is what's going to build your mental health. That's what's going to make you feel engaged and happy. And it's important to not think about it about as work or personal. Think about it as what's enriching to me as a person. Start there. And then work your way backwards.
That's so good. Thank you so much, Suhini, for helping us understand the burnout crisis and what we can do about it.
I really appreciate our conversations, Abby, because they're so thorough, and I really get to go deep into the things that I'm very passionate about. So I appreciate the number of questions that we've gone through today. It's been great. Ultimately, at the end of the day, it's easy to kind of go, oh, the employer is some, you know, MD back somewhere in an office that has nothing to do with operational daily life, but not, you know, most of what we deem as the employer are employees themselves. You know, these people, leaders and managers, they're experiencing the same thing, and then also having to support, you know, a team that's reporting into them. And I think it's equally important to acknowledge those challenges that they have and really emphasize that this is in their best interest. It is actually ultimately, if you put in that extra effort at the early stages, it's going to make your life easier ultimately at the end of the day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Abby. Have a great day.